This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
To another edition of My Worst Day. I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
And I'm Christina. And we've got a lot to munch on today.
Yeah.
A lot of tidbits. A lot of things have happened this week.
Yeah. You got a new dog?
Yes.
Yes. New puppy.
Puppy.
Pickles.
Yes. Ooh, so I haven't shared too much, but this year has been like a really, really incredibly difficult year. And I lost my dog, my longtime companion, and you know, Eric and I have been like kind of like meh, like talking, like maybe we want to get a puppy, like if we find one, if it comes across our lap. And he expanded his pet finder search to include like Bakersfield.
Yeah.
And this little mutt just comes up and he is adorable.
Yeah.
So, he looks so much like your
oh my gosh,
your dog.
He looks like Tig, minus the white spots. It's the cutest thing ever.
He is adorable. I'm literally so in love with him already after just one night. Yeah. So yeah, I'm excited. Pickles, my little pitty, has joined the family.
So cute. I'm so excited. I can't wait to meet him.
Me too. I can't wait to snuggle that little face.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been, we've got some stuff on the table today. So where do we start? What do you want to start with?
Well, you sent me a picture. I guess the internet is going a little bananas over this picture of Zoe Kravitz and Channing Tatum riding around on a moped together, right? It was like a moped situation. And I was, and you're like, oh my gosh, I think they're dating. And I was thrown for a loop because I'm like, I know that I saw her wedding pictures recently. Like, I was like, she just got married.
Right.
And so I looked it up because I was just like, is there an open marriage situation? Like, what's the deal?
Are they filming something?
Right. And it turns out they did get married in 2019 and then got divorced. Like, she just got divorced this year, 2021.
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, she got in and out real quick, which more power to you. Like,
well, the pandemic, I mean,
that's right.
That changed a lot of the game for people. Yeah. I think it either brought people closer together or pushed them far apart. And how we deal with stressful situations, like life-changing, world-changing situations sometimes just isn't compatible.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At least she learned it quick.
Yeah. That's right.
2 years is not that bad to, like, if you're with the wrong person, it's not like you wasted a lot of time.
I think they'd been together since 2016, Still.
But that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, a lot of that time could have been spent with her filming things and being on the road or being away. So then you have that, like, separation and come back together. So if that's kind of the relationship you've built around is, you know, and I don't know what he does. So that, you know, that could very well be it. You know, like you said, you're spending a lot more time together.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can speak to that certainly because the pandemic changed everything for you.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys have been married forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it literally flipped on its head. You guys have been used to coming and going, coming and going.
And thankfully, it changed it, I think, for the better.
Yeah.
I think Chris would agree. And Chris even said, like, you know, it was like middle of last year or whatever, like, you know, still me, no job or whatever. And I was just like, gosh, I felt garbage not having a job. Like, and it went for a long time. So for me, it was really hard. But Chris was like, it's funny because he's like, I'm actually have less anxiety now that you're not on the road. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't even realize like how much it not bothered him, but like how it affected him, like when being gone so much, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, you were basically gone all week and you'd be home on weekends and then gone again on Monday.
Yep.
Pretty much. Yeah. You know,
every single week.
Yeah.
Every
single week. It's a lot. But some relationships thrive like that. Yeah. And maybe that had been their situation previously.
Sure.
Right. And then all of a sudden they're spending all of this concentrated time together. And even beyond that, I mean, people just also change and evolve. Yeah. And sometimes that's compatible and sometimes it isn't. And we also need to be kind of. Our society, I think, needs to learn how to be more understanding of that. That, like, it's just like sometimes people just change and it's nobody's fault and nobody's the villain. It's just the way that that goes.
You just have different goals, different, like, especially, you know, when the quote unquote normal time to get married is in your, like, late 20s, 30s, or whatever, you change so much in that time. It's like, completely okay if you change into somebody that is not compatible with your partner anymore.
Right.
You know, normalize having goals and looking at things and living a life that you want. Don't like sacrifice or change to stay in a relationship that's not going to serve your life goals. So,
yeah.
Channing Tatum would serve my life goals.
Amen, sister. I take it. So, Channing Tatum. What do you guys think? Fuck, marry, kill?
Ooh. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's do it. Channing Tatum.
Since we're, you know,
Since we're here.
Yeah. I mean, I feel a way about it. I'm on board.
Yeah. Channing Tatum characters. Okay. So what was your first exposure to Channing Tatum? Because I saw Step Up in theaters.
Wow.
So that, old school.
Missed that.
Me too. That wasn't my time frame. It was too beyond. I was too past that age to enjoy that.
I was a teenager, I think an early teenager, and it was definitely like a teenagery movie for sure. All those dance movies that were like really big at that time.
Right.
But man, his ability to be able to dance
I've seen Magic Mike.
Hot.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we got to do Magic Mike.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, I've always liked Genuine's Pony, but now I feel a kind of way. About that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite Channing Tatum is 21 Jump Street.
Okay.
He is at his peak when he's funny.
Funny. Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
Absolutely. And honestly, it's the thing that makes him so hot, I think. Because otherwise he would just be a meathead dude.
Right. Because here's the thing, and this might be a hot take. I actually don't find anything exceptional about Channing Tatum's face at all.
Right.
Like, correct. He's fine.
He'd be just a regular meathead.
With a great body.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Total dude bro, though.
Yeah. But not, there's nothing to me when people are like, oh my God, you just look at him and he's so, and like, I don't necessarily get that from Channing Tatum, but I do think he is funny.
Yeah.
And talented, and when I could see he could dance, I'm like, okay, he's like multifaceted,
right?
And that's interesting to me, and that makes him way hotter.
Yeah,
he feels the most natural in a movie like 21 Jump Street.
Yes,
yeah.
Whereas his other roles,
even in Magic Mike, he's a little campy, and it kind of feels like he's like, this is ridiculous, and I know it's ridiculous, and I'm in on the joke,
right?
And it makes him relatable because you're like, okay, you can laugh at yourself. It. Yeah, you get it.
But when he's trying to be serious, it's just like it comes off for like really forced, really unnatural. It's just not.
Yeah, after Step Up, they really tried hard to make him this romantic lead. Like he was in like Dear John with Amanda Seyfried. Yes. And then he was in The Vow with Rachel McAdams. And it was like, y'all, listen.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. You're making your way through the Mean Girls cast. I see that. I see what you're doing.
I see what you're doing, yeah.
But it's not working because I just don't buy you as this person, right? I need a little bit of humor. I need a little bit of camp happening.
Yeah.
We would be remiss not to discuss his greatest role, Jupiter Ascending.
Yes.
In which he had pointed ears.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I have actually seen that movie.
It's awful.
I remember it almost like a fever dream. You know what I mean? Where it comes in flashes where I'm like,
You know? I do want to say, I think I've seen it. I have not seen it, but I think I've seen parts of it like in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. Like that's the memory that I have in a hotel room, like parts of it. And the only thing that I remember about it is one, his ears, ridiculous. Two, him and Mila Kunis having absolutely no chemistry.
No chemistry.
No chemistry.
Yeah. Not even a little.
Whatsoever.
And then there was like some really weird bad guys, like wealthy. It's just very bizarre.
So weird.
That very bizarre movie.
Was it a book? Was it a book?
I think it was. I feel like it was like a YA book or something in that regard.
That tracks.
Yeah. But that movie was, it was awful. I have to see if How Did This Get Made did it, because if they haven't, they need to do it immediately, if not sooner. That it is absolutely awful.
I really feel like something happens when people are dealing with like an IP that's popular, mm-hmm, where they feel like, oh, I don't have to put any more work in, because I know that like teens who read Jupiter Ascending are going to come see this, regardless Twilight. Of whether or not it's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I am loving the resurgence of Twilight, because all of the movies got put on Netflix.
Oh yeah. So there are some people watching it for the first time.
I got on to Twilight TikTok.
Uh-oh.
My TikTok algorithm.
Twi-talk.
Oh man, it is so incredible. First of all, TikTok thinks I'm a lesbian. And I'm okay with that. I'm really, really on board with it. Mm-hmm. I'm staying on the TikTok lesbian algorithm by interacting so that I can stay on it, because those are some of the best TikToks. But it's like that and like weird facts about animals.
Yep.
And like people making fun of Kristen Stewart in Twilight.
Amazing. I get like
that fucking baby.
Renesmee
baby stuff. I'm so thankful that people finally got on board with how fucking awful that was. I'm like, how have we not talked about this sooner?
Yeah.
That baby is frightening.
I feel like the conversation is late, but also welcome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's pick some Channing Tatum characters. Yeah. I mean, I think that I'm... Yeah. We got to throw in the Jupiter Ascending.
You think so? Okay.
Yes.
Because I was down for Step Up 2, I think, as well. Not the movie Step Up 2.
Although he was Step Up 2 in the streets. Yeah, he was in that one too.
You're like, specifically, I want the second one.
He was in that one.
He was more in depth.
I think he...
I really like the character development in that one better.
I do think that he bowed out after that. His star had risen too much for him to do Step Up, 3, 4, 5, 6, however many other ones exist.
Listen, I love a dancer. I really do. I'm gonna go with Magic Mike. You have to. It's kind of iconic.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So which one are you doing? Jupiter Ascending?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're singing. It's awful. You have to. We have to have somebody to kill, right? I'm definitely doing 21 Jump Street then, for sure. Right.
Oh, well, I know exactly. I mean, this feels easy to me.
Yeah, I think it's
Is it though?
Yeah.
Really think
I knew it was going to be you.
I know what I'm doing.
Really think about his character in 21 Jump Street.
I know. I am.
And his situation.
But wait, I am.
Okay.
All right.
You sound like such a mom, Christina.
Yes. Make good choices.
Make good choices.
I am going to do the easiest one first, which is Jupiter Ascending is out.
Yeah.
Goodbye. I can't with you pointy eared.
I mean, but who?
Channing.
We've discussed this before. It's too like serious. An alien species.
Yeah. No, thank you.
It could be interesting.
It could be.
No, thank you.
And you get to travel the universe.
No, thank you. We know how I feel about space and aliens.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Cassie's it's out. She's no not interested.
It's a hard pass. I am going to fuck 21 Jump Street, Channing.
Okay.
Because as much as I love his character, he's not marriage material in the least bit. I mean, he's playing a high schooler, which is part of the joke, because they are definitely too old looking.
Like sure, my
grandpa, you know, like, okay, grandpa. Like the jokes that they make about them being too old to be playing these characters is brilliant. I love how much he can laugh at himself. But he really, that's not a mature character, right?
No.
Like that character just doesn't know what he wants in life. He's doing this job, but it's like...
Isn't the premise that like he can't... Like he isn't able to finish like police academy or something like that?
No.
What was the like? How did they end up in that situation in the first place?
They were just. I don't remember.
Oh, never mind. Just cut all that out.
Oh, sorry. I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen the first one.
Yeah.
I watched 22 Jump Street not that long ago, and I'm like, but that wouldn't tell that story. I can't remember. Yeah, I think they like barely made it out, or he did. Yeah, he made it out of like all the hard physical stuff. Dude face
Jonah Hill
did all the like brainiac, got out of it that way, but couldn't do the other, so like they both couldn't pass the other sides of it, right?
Oh, got
something
it.
That's what like it was. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
At any rate, that I'm gonna fuck him because he's hot. He's funny. He can make fun of himself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's gonna be a great time.
Oh, hella good lay.
Yeah.
We're gonna have a hella good. It's gonna be probably too many times too, right? We're like, where it's gonna be like, oh, god damn it. Why are you calling me again? Can't say no.
I thought you were gonna talk about like too many times that night. That's what I like, thought too. Yeah.
No. No,
in a while since I've ridden the roller coaster.
Since we went on a bender, huh? Woo! And then I am going to marry Magic Mike. And here's why. Because that guy's smart. Magic Mike, he's a good dancer.
Mm-hmm.
He is sexy as all hell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He is going to pony your ass all night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. And he's fucking smart. He's crafty. He makes shit. He's got a business mind.
Mm-hmm.
He's starting his own business.
I love the entrepreneurship.
Just watch the movie for the sexy times because there is a little bit of a story there too.
There is.
it's very vague, but he's very with it.
No, and I feel like long term, like what he was talking about in the movie, I'm like, it could be successful. I feel like he would age out of being the dancer, but
yeah.
Like being the owner and like that kind of thing.
Right.
Like,
when he makes furniture, right?
Yeah.
So he's got that whole thing.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
I like smarts.
I think I'm actually exactly with you. I was actually worried that you guys would marry 21 Jump Street. And I'm like,
because he's the best character, but it's not the best. Yeah.
It's not the best marriage material.
No.
Yeah.
Listen, I was conflicted about it because you know I like somebody who can make me laugh.
Yeah, it's very important.
It's very important to me. And 21 Jump Street is going to make you laugh. Like he's going to keep life fun and like light and interesting.
And him and Jonah Hill?
Yeah, fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we're going to have a good time.
So much fun.
However, as I mature, mm-hmm. As I get older, I really do feel like, I don't know. I think I've got to do the exact same thing. I think I've got to go with marrying Magic Mike. You got to marry somebody who's got like a plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A solid plan for their future.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'm ride or die on that. I'd be like, babe, that's a great plan.
I'm here for
it. Mm-hmm. And I support it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, versus, you know, 21 Jump Street, he's like funny and everything like that.
Job,
but he's like, yeah, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You're going back to heist.
Imagine.
Chris is like, so I'm gonna my next job.
Chris
of all people.
He's got a backpack on.
Full beard.
I go back to high school. I have this undercover thing I had to do for the next
job. Can be like, we get him and Eric to dress up as 21 Jump Street for Halloween?
Totally. Because they are solidly in their 40s. Yes.
You're in high school. Sure.
Makes me think of that Steve Buscemi, like me.
Hello, fellow kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Amazing.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Did we wait? Keegan, did you say?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do the same thing as you. I mean, cool. I was really hoping that somebody would bite the bullet and choose to fuck the Jupiter Ascending guy, you know.
Dude, listen.
If anyone was going to do it, it might be you, Christina. I'm not going to lie. I was like, if one of us is going to do it, out of just pure curiosity.
You know what?
I mean.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Thank you. Just so you can report back.
I will. I'll do it for the podcast and do it for my friends just because I'm like, you know, 21 Jump Street, it'll be like fine or whatever. Yeah.
But you've had that before pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've sampled that flavor. You haven't sampled like pointy alien dick.
Oh,
pointy,
no.
Pointy eared.
Please don't be pointy.
What if it's just as pointy as his ears?
But it's a soft point.
Oh, oh my God.
A soft point.
No. It's just an ice cream, soft ice cream cone.
Oh,
no.
Oh my God. Get out of here with that. Now it's ruined. I mean, I probably still would anyways, just because. And also, like, you know, fucking on a spaceship or something. That'd be kind of cool.
It's a good view.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Nothing.
Know? Yeah.
Just empty space and pointy dick over here.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, we have some patrons that we've got to announce before we take a break and come back with stories.
Yeah. So I want to start this off by giving a huge apology to Amber Paré or Paré. I'm always the one who says the names wrong. I'm sorry. Pear.
Could be just Pear.
Could just be Pear. Let us know. Please let us know. But I also want to give a big apology to you, not only for not being able to pronounce your name correctly, but also because you were on our list of shout outs from last week and we somehow missed you. So we have delayed your shout out an additional week. And I'm so sorry for that. Thank you so much. We appreciate you and are so happy that you have joined us over on Patreon. Yeah. Also want to give a big shout out to Shane Hobley. Welcome, welcome to our Patreon family. Let us know if you have any fuck, marry, kill suggestions, if you have any suggestions for movies that you would like us to cover for Tainted Love episodes on Patreon. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys, let's take five and come back with some stories.
Sounds good.
And we're back. All right. I've got the Tainted Love this week, so I will get us started with some stories. This is a listener submission. Yay. I love that we've been getting so many listener stories lately.
Keep them coming.
Yeah, yeah. Keep
love coming. It.
All right. So it says, hey, ladies, I love listening to you every week. I finally pushed myself to write in one of my stories. Hope to send more.
Yes.
Okay. In my late 20s, I had just moved to a new area for the first time and was also horribly dumped at the same time. So I was lonely and heartbroken. Hmm. My solution was to start dating on OkCupid. Thus began my terrible yet comical, well, now at least, string of dates. I'll start with a guy I'll call Joey. This was my second date with him. So far, I thought he was really sweet. The physical attraction for me, though, wasn't completely there, but it was still early. For our date, we planned to go to this Italian restaurant nearby that neither of us had been to before. Earlier in the week, I had talked about getting this menu item with my friend, so when it came, I decided to take a picture of it and send it to her. While I'm doing this, he goes, oh God, you're not one of those people who take pictures of your food, are you? Okay, well, that was rude, but I explained I was sending it to my friend. After dinner, I invited him back to my place where we watched a few things on TV and then started to fool around. Then he decides to start fingering me. Sadly, though, his idea of fingering was to roughly shove his whole hand into my vagina repeatedly.
Sir!
Hey!
I wasn't prepared.
Yo!
Not prepared. One at a time.
You start with one.
Yeah, you can move up to two.
You can move up, but good.
Hand. Sir.
Poor. Whole hand. Shove.
The fuck, dude? The fuck?
It was like his only knowledge of foreplay came from watching porn. I was not wet while he was doing this.
Oh, God.
Was getting drier by the second. I was uncomfortable all around from my body positions. From my body positions while I was trying to give him a blowjob while also getting my vagina punched at the same time.
Oh my God.
Finally, I gently put my hand on his to move him out of me. I'm back to blowing him for a while, and then suddenly he stops me, jumps up, and mumbles something about not feeling well. I'm sitting there looking confused as he's quickly gathering his stuff and leaving my place in such a rush. No waiting for me to get dressed, no saying goodbye to me. He just is up and gone, leaving me feeling like I did something wrong.
Oh, shit.
It only got worse because he now started doing the typical guy ghost protocol. Wasn't texting, ignoring mine, and canceling plans we'd made earlier in the week.
I'm sorry, sir. You do not punch my vagina and then not answer my text.
Yeah.
I need information.
Yeah.
All I could do was let it be until finally he decided to text me while I was at work to let me know what was going on. In a wall of text, he said that when I stopped him vagina pounding me, I emasculated him.
Okay, goodbye.
And because of that, he couldn't get hard, which apparently was the first time in his life that that happened. So he was humiliated, and that's why he had run off.
I need a public service announcement now. Now, I am an avid listener of another podcast, Savage Love.
Mm-hmm.
I love this podcast. I've loved Dan Savage for a long time. And there are countless number of people, 99% of them identifying as female, that call in and ask questions of like, they're not enjoying sex. Hmm. They know what they need to enjoy it, but they're asking him like, how should I tell my partner? And it's because of shit like this. Yes. We have got to normalize getting notes.
Yeah.
Like in life, in general. In life, and like, but in sexy time, our bodies, our vaginas are completely different from person to person.
Absolutely.
What feels good to me might be like absolutely off for one of you guys.
For sure.
And how would a guy I just met and we're having sex for the first time know? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it bothers me to no end. It makes me fucking furious when guys pull this fucking shit or feel like emasculated when I'm like, I'm trying to help you out, bro. Like, I don't hold it against a guy who doesn't know how to please me 100% first time out the gate.
Yeah.
Also, you're hurting me. Like, physically, you're hurting me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I need to put a stop to that because it hurts.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
She says, everything was about him and his feelings with no consideration about mine. He further went on to say that he doesn't think we're sexually compatible.
You think?
Because he likes rough sex. And clearly I wasn't into that because I wasn't enjoying his performance. Rough sex does not mean punching me in my uterus.
No.
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 Okay?
And no. There's so much about this guy that's just wrong.
I replied back that the only thing humiliating about that night was how he treated me, but I guess I should have thanked him for saving me from all that bad sex.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You dodged a bullet in so many ways. Like, honestly.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Awful.
Ugh. I hate.
I hate you.
Like, insecure. Okie dokie. So this one is also from a listener. She's part of the Spark My Interest podcast.
Hey, which you guessed it on, right?
Yeah. So we love these ladies. And she writes, I was a late bloomer in a lot of ways. So by my senior year of high school, I had yet to go out on any real dates beyond inviting a boy to my house to play a strategy game with my family.
Oh, amazing.
Only to have him break one of my dad's most expensive hand-painted miniature game pieces.
Oh, no.
Well, that sounds like the most awkward date.
Yes.
Anyway, just before the end of the school year, there's a guy that I'd known since first grade who'd never shown the slightest bit of interest in me and vice versa, but then suddenly asked me to go on a hike with him over summer break. He was polite and fit, but very pale and awkward. I didn't particularly want to go on a hike with him, but he was politely persistent, and having little experience in the dating world, I let my sisters convince me that he might reveal a wonderful personality once I got to know him away from school.
Yeah. That's not going to work out.
You've known each other since the first grade. Yeah. If you haven't seen just a spark, you know, anything, nothing of interest, no, you can't.
No, it's not going to happen. So I show up at his house in the mountains on the outskirts of town. He says little more than hi, and we start off. There was no trail. His plan was to bushwhack our way through the forest to, I don't know, presumably some romantic vista away from the beaten
path.
This
is not romancing the stone, okay? You are not Michael Douglas.
No.
We are not doing this. Like, what vibes did I give off to you that made you think that, like, this is going to be fun?
You're giving off murder vibes.
Right? Murder vibes. Like, what if he pulls out a machete?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
No.
I'm Audi 5000.
Yeah. Also, like, if I'm going on a hike with you, I really, really like you because...
Hikes are hard enough.
Yeah.
And we've already discussed like a hike on a first date.
Yeah. I gotta really trust you if we're in hiking.
Dude, we were just talking about how I have a annual pass now for the national parks.
Can't wait.
And we have been talking. I will totally take you. Yes. But we had been talking for a while about going with our friends Jill and Patrick. And Jill is a fitness instructor and Patness and Patrick is like super, super fit as well. And I was literally like, I am going to have to train.
Yeah.
To go
keep up
to a national park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I feel like that'd be the same. Like, I've got to train to go on a hike, to go on a first date hike with you so that I don't look like I'm about to like hyperventilate and roll down the mountain.
Yeah. My goal when I was dating was to just get done with dating as soon as possible, because I'm like, can we stop pretending that we like to hike and stuff like that? Can we just do what we're gonna do, which is sit and watch Netflix together?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. So, but he is confident of where we are going, so I carefully follow. An hour later, we're above the tree line and still had no real conversation despite several attempts on my part. This better be some vista. We approach a large field of cow parsnip. Now, I happen to know what this is because my brother has had a run-in with cow parsnip.
I don't know what this is.
It looks, it's a plant that kind of looks like...
Is it stickers?
It will destroy your skin. Like, it up. So... I wasn't as familiar with this plant at the time, but it basically looks like a 6-foot stalk of celery with little white flowers at the top. He starts beating them away with a stick as he walks, so I do the same. Another half hour later, I find myself clinging to wild rose bushes on the side of something almost steep enough to be a cliff overlooking a small river.
You're in danger, girl.
What?
You are in danger.
Is happening here.
I can only assume he thought it was romantic to stand on the dangerous edge of the narrow mountain goat trail we were on, ready to magically keep his balance if the rose bushes, the thorns of which are digging into my fingers,
no.
suddenly gave way.
No. No. This sounds like the worst time.
This is awful.
This is a nightmare for me. No.
No, like
I'm scared.
Yeah,
for your
clinging,
life.
Clinging on the side of a cliff to wild rose bushes.
No,
on a knot path, having to go through. Oh my gosh! So I release my bleeding fingers from the wild rose bushes, and we carefully made our way down the goat trail, over the stream, and back to a road where we passed some very fresh bear poop. So now we're gonna get
bears. Oh
my god! Great. Now the whole station's in jeopardy.
Bears. Not great, but at least we were on a human-made path for the first time in 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
I kept my eyes peeled for that bear while he quietly walked next to me. By the time we made it back to his house, I was completely out of
water.
You're
not even getting
food.
Good conversation.
No.
You're, I'm risking my life in silence?
Oh,
no.
No. I was completely out of water and food, famished, and determined to just say no to anyone I was not interested in for all time. His mother tried to make polite conversations, but I got out of there as fast as I could.
Ugh.
And I wish that were the end of the story, but for a month after that, I sported 2 giant seeping blisters the size of hot dogs on my chin from the cow parsnip.
On her chin.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. It scarred my brother's legs because there was some on my parents' land or whatever when he was like working it years ago when he was a kid before he knew what it looked like. But it will create like seeping blisters on your skin. Yeah. So be very careful. Look it up. If you're going to hike off the beaten path, look up that shit because it will mess you up.
Damn.
So... 2 seeping blisters the size of hot dogs on my chin from the cow parsnip. The chemicals that rub off from this plant are a major skin irritant, and the effects are exacerbated by prolonged sun exposure and calamine lotion.
Oh my God.
So after a month of answering questions like, geez, what happened to your face?
Oh God.
The blisters hardened, healed, and the light pink scars generally faded with time. For a while, I thought I'd be permanently scarred.
No shit.
I have led all of my hikes since then and always stay on the trail.
No. Oh, my God.
Can you imagine, like, being blistered on your face from a bad date? I would literally kill that guy.
And date scarred you, literally.
And that date, I mean, that, because I know my skin, it would scar me forever.
Yeah.
Because, like, the way that my skin scars, it would darken, and then those dark marks would never go away.
Right.
It would be horrible. Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, like, we've had a lot of bad dates. That one is really up there for me, actually,
yeah,
in terms of,
that one triggered,
like,
you for her, sure.
Yeah. Like, for me personally, doing something like that, I would be so fucking pissed.
Yeah.
Well, and itchy, and like, you get in a bath later, and then like all your cuts are just stinging, you know? No.
Yeah.
You're like, absolutely.
Absolutely not. And I like going, like, I like hiking and stuff. That sounds like
on
a fucking
path.
Nightmare. Yeah.
Yes. On something that was meant to be walked on.
Yeah.
And with someone you don't even like. Like, that's the kicker, too. It's like, this isn't some, like, cute romantic adventure. You don't even like this person.
Yeah. And it's in silence for, like, a couple hours while you're just, like, traipsing through, like, hot, sticky plants.
No.
Ugh. No.
Okay. Well, I have a story for you.
Okay.
It's not super long.
Okay.
But I think it's pretty fucking funny.
Okay. Go for it.
All right. So, as a relatively recent mature widow, new and inexperienced to the dating scene after 31 years of marriage, I had a dinner date with a much younger woman who, as it turned out, was extremely aggressive, which was unheard of in my prime, but, you know, you know, times have changed. Yeah. Ending our first date, I was dropping her off and had intended only to give her a thank you peck on the cheek. However, our quote goodbye moment morphed into a high school like makeout session.
Oh, nice. I love that.
During which she started shockingly to grope me. My two-seater car was dark and cramped, and I was wearing a suit and a winter overcoat, but I nevertheless was extremely surprised to feel her hand navigating south of my belt. Suddenly, she squeezed hard, and with sheer delight and fire in her dimly lit eyes, delightfully exclaimed that I had, quote, an enormous penis. In fact, she was squeezing a single large roll of my lower belly fat.
Oh. That's not where I was expecting that to go.
That was very unexpected. Oh, no. So much.
It's so embarrassing. How do you get out of that? What do you do?
For the first and last time in my life, I glanced at my pretend wristwatch and told her that I had to leave due to a late hour and an early morning meeting. I couldn't imagine her reaction and disappointment had our date developed any further, as I am at best average.
Oh.
I bailed and we never spoke again.
Oh my god. Wow. That was amazing.
Crap.
Poor guy.
Oh my god.
Oh.
That's too much. He's like, about that time. I gotta go.
Ooh, early morning tomorrow. He's like, you're gonna go home with that?
Oh my god.
No. Sorry, I keep picturing it in my head. Oh, okay. All right. So,
okay.
I just got back from Springfield a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, you know what could be cool? Doing a hometown story.
Ooh. Yeah.
So, I am going to do a story that is that takes place in Springfield. Springfield is not a big place. Like, it is a fairly small city. So there's not a ton of stuff that happens there. You know, there's a lot of like petty crime or whatever, but there's not a ton of really shocking, interesting, juicy stories, mm-hmm. right, that go on in Springfield. I'd heard about this one a few years ago, and then I watched a 2020 article on it, and then I read a Newsleader, which is the Springfield newspaper, article about this story.
We love a hometown.
We mm-hmm. love a hometown. Okay. So I'm watching, first of all, I have to tell you, whoever is writing the 2020 episodes, just... incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. The number of like Missouri puns that were thrown in. There was definitely a show me state
pun
thrown in there. It was gorgeous.
Wasn't there a show, a murder show that used to be like all like hometowns and had this cheese ball narrator and it was like, nothing ever happens in the sleepy town of Charleston.
I know exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I think it's called like City Confidential or something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh man. Okay. So 2020 describes Springfield as tranquil and where the buckle of the Bible Belt meets beer joints, which like,
okay,
true.
Okay.
Lots
okay.
of bars, lots of churches.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
So, uh-huh. yes. Mark and Diane Stoudy met while in college, and they got married in 1985 when Diane became pregnant with their first child, Sean, who was born just 6 months after they got married. So,
shotgun wedding.
Mm-hmm. 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 The couple would go on to have three more children, all girls, Sarah, Rachel, and the youngest, Brianna.
So, those are the most Midwestern names mm-hmm. I've ever heard.
Sean, Sarah, Rachel, and Brianna. Mm-hmm. Yes. So Diane worked full time as a nurse and then a clinical supervisor at United Healthcare, and Mark stayed home with the kids. Things nice. Were financially difficult for the family, but even so, they were able to purchase a modest three-bedroom home in Springfield. And in the beginning, you know, everyone said that the couple appeared to be pretty happy. They were a young couple, especially before they had so many children. Mm-hmm. Things seemed to be it's very Midwestern normal kind of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did this happen again? In the 80s? Because I'm like trying to figure out how a single income family with four kids can afford a house.
Well, and yeah, well, that.
Yeah. I mean, they got married in 1985. So I imagine they probably purchased their house not long after. But also, it's four kids in a pretty small house. The house is like three bedrooms. It's not very large, but also property in Springfield is cheap.
Right.
You know, comparatively to the rest of the country.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's all of those things.
But even still beyond the house, like living expenses and, you know what I mean? Like
it was hard, especially on one income. You know, she's working.
Why is he not working? Is there a reason?
Because probably daycare.
Daycare, sure.
Daycare would eat up one of the incomes anyways. So you might as well.
But I mean, we will get to this. But like he, as far as I can tell, and maybe I'm wrong again, like when you're doing a hometown of your own hometown, it's just like where in a place that's that small. If you know otherwise, please write in and correct me. But from what I found, I don't think he ever held down a steady job, even when the kids got older, even when they were in school. So I don't know. But I do know that it was a point of contention in the relationship because it's like, she's...
Would be for me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, blah, blah, blah. But Mark was still considered to be a loving, doting father. He was extremely outgoing and extroverted. He had a lot of friends. Diane, on the other hand, was far more reserved. She was basically described as being polite but not overly friendly to anyone. Like, she didn't like talking to the neighbors. She didn't really want to make small talk with anybody. She kind of kept to herself. And Mark was the opposite of that. So in addition to being the primary breadwinner for the family, Diane was also a regular churchgoer, and she played the organ every Sunday for their congregation. So as her children got older and needed less attention, you know, because they were in school and everything, Mark began singing lead for a local blues band called Messing with Destiny. And he would occasionally, again, so she's working and he... From what I've been able to find, the only real work he had in this period was that he would occasionally pick up shifts as a bartender at bars where he had gigs. So, yeah.
I think you can guess how I feel. I feel kind of way.
I know.
Yeah.
I feel kind of way about this.
Yes. Yeah.
Do not love it.
As the years wore on, as you can imagine, Diane began to become increasingly discontented with her lot in life. You know, she's been with the same person since college. She's working all the time. They're living in close quarters. She doesn't think that her husband is carrying his weight in their relationship. Mm-hmm. And she feels just overworked and underappreciated in general. And then in addition to that, her youngest child, Brianna, had a learning disability that made school challenging. Her son, Sean, was born with a spectrum disorder that required special care. You know, he was in his 20s and not really able to kind of live on his own. And their oldest daughter, Sarah, had gone to college, and she was in her early 20s at this time, and she'd graduated from college, but she was still living at home. She hadn't been able to get a job, and she had a mountain of student debt, right?
Dude, that's a lot. What you've just described is a lot for a healthy relationship
to deal
with. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But doing it in a not healthy? Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, up until this point, now it will take a turn, but up until this point, you do kind of, I can empathize with her in terms of just like.
This has been an up and left episode is what it. This is.
Yeah. I mean,
up and left.
She
got to start that podcast.
But that feeling like she's kind of like fallen into her life, right? Like you just kind of fell into this thing. You got married because you got pregnant and now here you are, how 20 something years later, and like, this is your life.
Is this what it is?
Yeah, you know, I can empathize with that feeling.
You had another tainted love a while back when you were doing, I think when you did Dannemora, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like kind of that same thing where it's just like, you just wake up one day, you're like, is this it? Is this life?
Yeah. What's it for? You know? Yeah. So I get it. She had, though, she'd built like a really special relationship with her middle daughter, Rachel. So Rachel was 22 at the time, and she'd always been described as responsible. She was highly intelligent. She was a talented artist, a musician. And while in college, she remained a straight A student. So she was a straight A student all through school. She's basically like the one that her mom doesn't have to worry about.
The golden child.
Yeah, the golden child, the one that she can rely on. And she, yeah. So on the Friday.
Who bears all the pressure of that as well?
Yeah.
On the Friday before Easter Sunday in 2012, which also happened to be Mark's birthday weekend, Mark's bandmates noticed that his behavior seemed a little off at their rehearsal. Now, his band at this time was actually starting to pick up some bigger gigs. They had started getting gigs in Branson.
Ooh.
You know, it was, yeah, I know, fancy. It wasn't just gigs in Springfield. They were traveling to Branson, and they were actually opening for the Aretha Franklin, like, impersonate legends.
Oh my God.
Act, right?
Oh my God.
So things seemed to be going pretty well for his band at the time. But his bandmates noticed that things just didn't seem quite right. He was kind of like lethargic, like generally just not himself, pretty low energy. And then the next day he showed up at his friend's house saying like, hey, like, let's go out for my birthday. And they went out, but his friend continued to notice his slightly unusual behavior. And also the thing that he noticed the most was that Mark looked yellow, like his color was yellow.
Poison.
Liver.
So the following day on Easter Sunday, Diane goes to church. She comes home from church and she finds her husband dead in bed.
Oof.
So when asked by authorities, Diane says that her husband had been sick for a while. The medical examiner notes a ring of blood around Mark's mouth in the medical report, but ultimately rules the death as due to natural causes and says that he had a heart attack.
Huh.
No autopsy or testing was done on Mark's body, and Diane quickly had him cremated and had his ashes spread. And while Mark's...
She knows what's up.
Mm-hmm. While Mark's close friends and family were devastated by this news, his brother also told 2020 that it wasn't that hard to believe that his 61-year-old brother could have died from natural causes, saying that he didn't lead a healthy lifestyle and that maybe that contributed to his death. He was like, he drank a lot. He didn't exercise. He ate fast food all the time because he didn't cook for himself. So they were like, okay, you know, it seems very sudden, but it's possible. It's happened before.
Right.
Diane organized a memorial service where Mark's bandmates played his favorite song. And not long after, she cashed in Mark's $20,000 life insurance policy and moved the family into a bigger home in a nicer neighborhood.
$20,000?
Uh-huh. It's not a lot.
Honey, yeah.
It's not a lot of money.
Feels like a big move, though.
Well, again, it's Springfield.
Yeah, you could sell your original house. Maybe they made a little bit on that, and she used it as a down payment for another house.
I mean, I've seen the house they moved into, and it was, knowing what I know, especially like in that time, she probably got that house for $125,000, you know, or whatever. So $20,000, you could do it.
Yeah.
In September of 2012, the Stoudy's new neighbors are surprised to find police cars lining their street and a coroner's van parked in the Stoudy driveway.
Hmm.
Sean Stoudy, the 26-year-old firstborn of Mark and Diane, had died suddenly.
What? Oh, no.
Diane told the authorities that her son had been ill with flu-like symptoms for the past 3 weeks and due to his condition was prone to seizures. She told them that around 6:30 that morning, she checked on her son before leaving for church. And when she returned, she found that her oldest daughter, Sarah, had found him. He had fallen out of bed and was lying on the floor without a pulse. So once again, the medical examiner made note of a mysterious ring of blood around the young man's mouth, but ultimately, after an autopsy, determined that his death was due to a pre-existing condition and closed the case. But they did do an autopsy on Sean.
That's the place to murder, apparently. That guy's like, yep. Accident.
It's fine.
Accident.
Or well, I mean, if you
natural causes,
not to give like murderers advice or anything, but a lot of small towns, the coroners are like, elected or appointed or whatever. They have no medical training.
That's right.
Whatsoever. So
noted.
So in less than 6 months, there had been 2 deaths in this family, and no one asked any questions. On the day of the death, after the coroner leaves, one of Diane's new neighbors comes over to check on the family. It's the Midwest.
Yeah.
So she didn't know these people.
She brought a hot dish.
Yeah, she probably, cornflakes on top. She describes, so she goes over there and she's like, hey, you know, I saw the coroner's van. Like, is everything okay? And she says that Diane says, yeah, my son died. Just like that. Like, no emotion, just kind of nothing, which was odd and alarming.
Yeah.
After his death, Diane did not hold a funeral or memorial service for Sean. There were no obituaries about his death published anywhere.
Your only son, your oldest child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And like Mark, Sean was quickly cremated. Okay. In June of 2013.
Come on.
9 months after the death of her brother, 24-year-old Sarah becomes ill with, you guessed it, flu-like symptoms. This time, Diane takes her daughter to the emergency room, and at this point, her condition is so grave that it does not appear as though she's going to survive. Her kidneys had shut down completely, her pancreas and other organs were following suit, failing one by one as her brain begins to hemorrhage blood.
Jesus oh my Christ. God.
So she is fighting for her life in the hospital. And at this time, Diane takes to Facebook and she starts posting, asking for prayers for her daughter, who's now in critical condition in the hospital. And it's around this time that an anonymous call comes into 911. And the caller says that he has reason to believe that Diane Stoudy may have been responsible for 2 deaths and a potential 3rd death.
Ooh.
After this, I think what he meant by that, that's how it was said on 2020, but I think that they meant like, that Sarah's in the hospital.
Yeah. Potential 3rd.
Yeah. After this, the Springfield police are like, maybe something fishy's going on here.
Yeah.
Maybe we should look into this.
Right.
So they immediately pull the reports on Mark and Sean's deaths. And when looking at them side by side, they're like, wow, it's an awful lot of similarities in their symptoms. And of course, there's also that ring of blood around their mouths after they... you know, after they died. So when detectives visited the hospital to speak to Sarah's doctors, the doctors told them that they had run a litany of tests and weren't sure what was happening, but they were suspicious that this could be a possible poisoning case.
Yeah.
And so at this point, they figure it's time to bring in Diane and talk to her. So
why does everything smell like almonds in here?
Yeah, like, So they call her up and she volunteers to come to the station to be interviewed. Now, this interview was recorded,
amazing.
And it's weird. It's weird, y'all. Okay, so Diane appears relaxed, very relaxed. She's laughing throughout, including when she's talking about how her daughter, Sarah, is, quote, as close to death as you can get, and that she can't believe that she's still living.
Wow. Right.
And, you know, I think, as usual, they try and give the benefit of the doubt because, like, this could be a person who's like, man, experienced a ton of trauma in a very short amount of time. And maybe they're just reacting weird
right.
to the situation.
Yeah.
Right? She showed no emotion when talking about the deaths of her husband or her son either. So then the detective starts to ask about Diane's marriage, to which she replies, quote, we were still married, but it is not what you would call a good marriage, and said that she was unhappy. She claimed that Mark cheated on her and spent his free time drinking and smoking weed. And the detectives, then the detectives shifted the conversation to Sarah. And Diane says she didn't do anything to her daughter except maybe not take her to the ER soon enough. She starts saying that she's a horrible mother and that she knew that her son Sean had been having suicidal thoughts.
Okay, wait, what?
Yeah, like he had been talking about wanting to kill himself. Like she's volunteering this information.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
We know it's not a suicide, ma'am.
Right.
Yeah.
Of the things we do know, that wasn't a suicide.
It's strange because it's like she wanted to come clean because she's saying, I knew that he was suicidal. And what she says is, I didn't do anything about it because I was, quote, tired of it. Like, tired of him, basically. Like, she's like, okay, yeah. I mean. So the detective starts playing on her, you know, faith. He's saying, like, I'm a believer as well. And if you feel like you've been a horrible mother, or you've failed your kids, like, now is the time to ask for forgiveness. Like, this is your opportunity. So she immediately admits that she knew that they were drinking antifreeze and was so mad at them that she didn't want to take them in when they started to get sick.
Okay. Nobody drinks antifreeze. No. Nobody. And in fact, I think there's another case with a woman that poisons her husband with antifreeze. They actually went into like what it is swallow antifreeze and what it does to your body and how awful that is. Yeah. Nobody kills themselves or does that. Right. Nobody.
So when the detective tells her that so the detective is like, you knew that they were drinking antifreeze because you were giving it to them. Correct. Basically. And she replies by saying, I didn't know what else to do. She said that she'd been giving each member antifreeze for just a few days before their deaths, putting the substance in Coca-Cola and Gatorade. She told detectives that at that point in their marriage, she hated her husband. She said he was abusive and that he would throw things at her and the children and that she'd just had enough. So he's like, okay, well, what about the kids?
Yeah.
And so she explained that Sean and Sarah would trash the house and they would never help her clean or contribute to the household since neither of them had a job.
Wow. That is a woman that was just like filled her cup overfloweth with resentment. Yeah. And it just went everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She classified
the overflow was antifreeze, though.
Yeah. She classified her son, Sean, as worse than a pest and said that she began poisoning Sarah because she still hadn't gotten a job after graduation and she didn't want to be left holding the bag for Sarah's student loans.
Holy wow. Shit.
Didn't want to have to pay the student loans.
Wow.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Then
that is beyond offensive. It's for Sean, for Sarah, for like,
wow. That's
horrifying.
That's terrifying.
Your fucking mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And then she said, quote, I'm not a perpetual killer. I'm just stupid. And said she regretted doing it.
Okay.
So they arrest Diane and they proceed to search the Stouty home. And they call in 22-year-old Rachel to tell her the news, you know, and she's shocked by this. She's shocked by the news that her mother murdered her father and her brother and was attempting to murder her sister. And she tells detective that she wondered if she could have been next and says that her mom had an unusual interest in poisonous plants and would often talk about cyanide. So while this interview is going on, the police are searching the Stouty home. There they find the antifreeze in the garage next to a 6-pack of Coke.
Just oh my God.
On the workbench.
Wow.
In Rachel's room, they stumble across a purple diary. When they open it up, they found an entry that had been written a year prior to the death of her father. Mm-hmm. And in it, she appears to know that Mark and Sean are about to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So it reads, quote, It's sad when I realize how my father will pass on in the next 2 months. Sean, my brother, will move on shortly after. It will be tough getting used to the changes, but everything will work out.
Oh, shit.
I knew it.
So after the interviewing detective is briefed, so he like takes a break from talking to Rachel, they're like, can you come in here and shut the door, please? They're like, this is what we found, right? And they give him photocopies of the diary. So he goes back in and he's like, now, of course, suspecting that she's an accomplice to these murders. So he shows her the diary entry and she admits that she wrote it, but that she wrote it because she'd been having a lot of really bad dreams about her father and her brother dying. Yeah. And when she told her mom that she'd been having these bad dreams, that's when her mother told her that she was thinking about killing them.
Yeah, no.
No.
And it's weird anyway, because I'm just like, okay. No.
And so you didn't think to...
Okay. Okay. So when he asks what her response was to this, she says that she told her mom it would be quick and easy. And from then on, the two of them started planning together.
Damn. Right?
Like, it's like, I don't know where her head was at. Like, she was like, maybe I can still throw mom under the bus, but then folded immediately upon being asked. Like, okay, well, what was your response to hearing that your mom wanted to kill your brother and your dad? And she was like, well, we could make it quick.
That's some weird, like, golden child shit. You know what I mean? Like, she was obviously, like, favored child. And there's some weird, like, interplay things going on.
And, you know, if you watch the interviews, their affect, both Diane and Rachel, is so weird.
It's like that Grey Garden shit. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's so weird. It's so weird to hear her talk, especially. She's flat. Like, her voice is very, very flat.
Oof. That's some real sociopath shit right here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they started researching options. They Googled suffocation, death by pills, and even how to kill your husband. Just,
wow,
you know,
like you do.
Yeah. On the Google.
Not even on the dark web, huh?
Right. Web. Didn't even go that incognito tab. No,
yeah, no, not okay. Even private tab.
Mm-mm. So
Google dark web.
Rachel even started looking into witchcraft as a possible option.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so finally, they landed on antifreeze as their weapon of choice because it could be easily put into other substances. And Diane wanted a specific tasteless kind of antifreeze. So they Googled and they found a brand that they thought would work and they purchased that brand.
Hey, how is that something Google? You can search on Google?
Tasteless antifreeze.
How does that not put you on a list?
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's
like,
just like...
Cousin, like, ding. You should probably take a look at that.
It gives you a Home Depot article. It's like top 10 tasteless antifreeze brands.
It's Ranker.
Yeah. Ranker. So initially, they agreed on only killing Mark, the dad. But after Diane had gotten away with that so easily, she started talking to Rachel about killing Sean. She thought that he was burdensome and irritating. And she...
That's fucking awful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
so fucking offensive.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. I mean, and Rachel starts saying that she didn't think that they needed to kill Sean. Like, she and her mother actually argued about Sean because Rachel thought that he could go into an assisted living facility rather than having to, you know, die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But eventually she was talked into it. And when asked about her sister, Sarah, this is what Rachel said. She said, quote, Sarah was equally unneeded. We could have found someplace else for her, but she was very adamant that Sarah was just a burden and that Sarah needed to be taken care of.
Wow.
So Rachel, of course, was also arrested for the murder of her mother and brother. When her purse was searched after the arrest, detectives found a note with a poem on it. Do you want to hear the poem?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I need to hear the poem.
It read, Once upon a time, there were six. Now there are three. Only the quiet ones will be left. My mom, my little sister, and me.
Whoa.
When the news gets out, I mean, of course, people are shocked. Again, not a lot of stuff happens in Springfield, you know. Except, of course, the anonymous 911 caller. The caller had been the pastor at the church where Diane played the organ.
Uh-oh.
Pastor Jeff Sippy. Called
like,
it in.
No.
He's like, something's not right. So he told detectives that he couldn't shake the feeling that Diane had something to do with the deaths, that her demeanor after the deaths just didn't sit right with him. And so when he saw on Facebook that Sarah was in the hospital, he had to call it in. He was like,
nice.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Is Mr. Sippy's wife Mrs. Sippy?
I hate you. Well, I mean, that means his daughter is Mississippi. No, that doesn't work as well, does it? I was like, Miss. No, 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 no. Okay. No. No. Okay. Okay. Anyway.
Sorry.
No, that was good. It was good. Miraculously, their 24-year-old Sarah recovers from her injuries, though she had to relearn how to walk and talk and was left with permanent brain damage that may prevent her from ever living independently.
Oh my God. Oh my God. What a monster.
Mm-hmm. When Rachel was asked why they decided to take Sarah to the hospital, this is... Okay, brace yourselves. So they call her back in after she's been in jail for a while, Rachel. Uh-huh. And they're like, you know, we can't figure out why you didn't just let Sarah die at home. Like, why would you risk doctors examining her and stuff? Like, why would you take her to the hospital? And she said, quote, I didn't want another one to die in the house. Houses are nasty when someone's died in it, and I have nightmares.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
When the officer asked when they were planning on killing 12-year-old Brianna, she said sometime after Sarah.
Oh,
so they were going to kill the 12-year-old too.
Wow.
Yeah. So both women faced the death penalty in Missouri. So it's not a surprise that Rachel turned on her mom, taking a plea deal for second degree murder in exchange for her testimony against her mother. Knowing that the odds were stacked against her, just before the trial in 2016, Diane Stoudy took an Alfred plea, still refusing to admit wrongdoing, to the murders of her husband and son and the attempted murder of her daughter, receiving a sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Sarah now lives in an assisted care facility and has a state-appointed guardian due to the neurological damage that she suffered.
Wow.
She told ABC News that her mother and her sister took away her livelihood and independence, but they didn't take away her dreams for the future and still hopes to one day be a French translator.
Aww.
Despite everything, she says that she maintains that she wants to be referred to as a survivor, not a victim, and that she's no longer angry. She says, I forgive them for what they did because forgiveness is the right thing to do.
Oof. Wow. That's I wouldn't forgive. That's bigger than I would have been.
So how much time did the sister get?
I don't know.
That's what terrifies me is that she's younger.
Yeah.
And somebody like
second degree, I would imagine she'll get out at some point.
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. I don't know. Oh, anyway.
That was fascinating.
Dude, that is like,
I want to do a deep dive on that that is.
And poor Brianna, the youngest. Like she was 12, which is like such a impressionable age, at the time when all of this was discovered. And it's like your mom and one of your sisters are in jail for killing your dad and your brother, and your other sister is living in an assisted care facility because your mom and your sister poisoned her.
Oh my goodness.
Like, how do you cope with that?
Yeah. At 12.
I don't know.
Serious therapy, I hope.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, luckily, like all the news sources, like no one has revealed her picture or anything like that. She was protected because of her age. So I hope that helps a little bit. I imagine
sure she's changed her name. And
I think she's living with relatives or something. But
honestly, like how offensive for people that A, can't have children, but also B, have children with special needs. Like
awful.
You are just an absolute monster. Fucking monster.
Yeah.
Monster.
Ugh. Yeah. It's awful. Terrible.
I need to get that taste out of my mouth. Yeah. So what are you guys watching this week?
So I really love... So I have been listening to a lot of Audible lately. I've kept up with my Audible subscription. And I really love all those like Leon Moriarty books. Mm, so like Big Little Lies. And I've listened to a bunch of them. So when I saw that they were going to be doing Nine Perfect Strangers as a Hulu show with Nicole Kidman and Melissa McCarthy and like Michael Shannon, I was like, oh my God, great cast. I love this author. So I got that on Audible and listened to the whole thing. And then I just watched the very first episode of the show.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about it. I can tell, you know, they've made some changes, of course. But I think it's going to be really good. I'm really stoked about it.
Nice. What have I watched? We've been binge watching Leverage. Did I tell you guys about this already?
No. Who's in that?
Timothy Hutton,
Okay.
Is the only like name.
I'm seeing the poster for
it. Uh-huh. Right. It's they go after like big businesses who've like done people wrong and like get back.
We love to
like
see
justice.
Yeah.
It's very justice. It's exactly that. So we're on the fifth season of the original, and they just released on Amazon Prime the newest. There's a whole new, like they have a new relaunch of the show. It's called Redemption. So it's Leverage Redemption.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that show sounds good. So I was like, well, I feel like I have to watch Leverage to know what's going on. And I was like, oh, this is a really fucking good show. So Chris and I have been binging it. Leverage Redemption will be next because there's only five of the original seasons, but it's got Noah Wiley in the new, as opposed to Timothy Hutton.
Okay.
So, because I do think that Timothy Hutton mildly got canceled because of
Because of something, I'm sure. I haven't seen Noah Wiley in a minute.
I'm actually really excited.
Yeah,
I love him.
That's exciting.
I love him.
Well, I told you guys about this before we started recording that, you know, we have a friend that works sound for touring Broadway productions that managed to snag a couple free tickets to see the final dress rehearsal of Hamilton at the Pantages here in LA. And I had never heard it before, never watched it, never seen it, because I'm a pretty, the way that I like to do musicals is nothing's going to ever beat the live performance for me. If I haven't heard it before, like just listening to it on the CD is not going to be as good. I'm not going to like it as much. I have a better chance of liking and absorbing the music, the show, all of that if I'm seeing it live first. So I managed to do that for Hamilton. God knows how.
Right.
Since it's like the most popular thing for the last few years. But it was so moving. And Keegan and I were talking about like that experience of live theater after a couple years of not having it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very lucky. The Pantages checked everyone for vaccination.
Oh, wow.
Which
good.
Is great. And everyone wore masks the whole time.
Oh, good.
So,
good.
Yeah, I love that. Please, more of that everywhere.
Yeah.
Definitely. I've got my vaccine passport on my phone. I love it. But it was so incredible. It was just incredible. So I've been binging everything Hamilton since then.
Welcome to the party.
Welcome. I'm like so obsessed with it now. Late to the party, but I did make it.
You made it here. Yeah, that's all that matters.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
But it's definitely like reignited. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I want to go to more theater now.
I just
wish it was safer.
Well, and I wish we understood, like, I wish we knew what the future of theater was even going to look like at this point. Like, local theater, no idea if or when, like, local theater will be coming back. It's sad. It's hard.
Yeah, because it's just that nothing's going to beat that. I mean, that the energy from the crowd and from the stage was just something that I haven't felt in a few years. And I was like, God, I fucking miss this. I miss watching it. I miss participating in it. Like the whole thing, it was very overwhelming. It was really, really amazing. So if you do have the opportunity to do it safely, you know, like I said, having everybody be vaccinated and wearing masks while doing it made it so that I personally made that choice for myself that I felt comfortable doing it. I say, you know, and I feel bad. We know a lot of Broadway performers and stuff like that are out of work and been out of work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Complicated.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad we're ending on this now.
Yeah, I know. We're like all bummed out. Like, yeah, because I mean, just musicians too, and a lot of people have had a really, really tough time, and unfortunately are going to continue to have a tough time because people can't act right, and people are having to cancel shows again and cancel tours again.
I just want to do a live show again.
I know.
Yeah. Someday. Yeah. Hey, if somebody isn't wanting to get vaccinated, tell them they have to because My Worst State has to perform.
That'll be the thing that convinces them.
Shit, what,
after all these years and all this death, it's like okay, you didn't mention that My Worst State was trying to tour. In that case,
oh damn,
exactly.
If only I'd known, I got this shot a long time ago.
If you guys have anything that we should watch, if you have stories, if you want to just reach out and give us Fuck, Marry, Kill suggestions or just to say hi, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstatepodcast.com, and we love you so much.
Cheers. Cheers.
This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.